Namaskar.
Bienvenue.
I'm from Bangalore, India.
Dublin, Ireland.
Turkey.
The Philippines.
This is Feet into Worlds.
I came here to study.
To work. To volunteer.
Build a life of my own.
Welcome to Feet into Worlds.
Esto es Con los pies en dos mundos.
Bir ayağım burada, bir ayağım orada yaşıyorum.
Welcome to Feet into Worlds.
Knowing where to find the best Chinese food has long been a point of pride for New Yorkers. But it's not that easy anymore as the Chinese population has soared and the city's Chinatowns have multiplied. Faced with a dizzying array of dishes and regional specialties, we found an expert to guide us. I'm John Rudolph, executive producer of Feet into Worlds, a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. On this Food in Two Worlds podcast, we're going to visit some of the city's best regional Chinese restaurants with chef Qian Lam Ko. We'll also introduce you to a couple of second-generation Chinese Americans who are putting their unique stamp on one of my favorite Chinese foods, dim sum. And in honor of Chinese New Year, journalist Richard Ye brings us to his family dinner table for some very special dishes made only once a year. But first...
Well, welcome to the Flushing Walking Tour. My name is Qian, and I'm going to be showing you some of this very unusual regional cooking of China in Flushing.
Qian Lam Ko recently led a group of food writers on a tour of Chinatown, the one in Flushing. Qian's company is called Red Cook. He puts on private banquets that feature dishes and ingredients from across China. Within just a few square blocks in Flushing, all around the Main Street subway stop, he introduced us to an astounding variety of Chinese regional cooking styles.
Flushing is one of the areas that is populated by many Asians, including Chinese, Korean, and Japanese. But, you know, lately, a lot of the Chinese people have moved into the area, and there's a huge population. There's a lot of new immigrants are all moving into Flushing, so you'll see a lot of new cuisines being offered here in this region.
Qian grew up in Singapore, but his family originally comes from China's Fujian province. For our first stop, he chose a Taiwanese restaurant called Ku Xiang.
And the food of Taiwanese cooking pretty much is related to Fujian cooking, which is Fujian is the province in the mainland of China. And most of the cooking include a lot of seafood, a lot of braising and steaming.
Qian ordered three dishes for us to try. First, an omelet filled with tiny Chinese oysters. Then we were served a delicious dish with an unappetizing name, stinky tofu.
Like European cheese, stinky tofu has, you know, various degrees of fermentation. So certain stinky tofu is more aromatic than the others. But today we're going to taste one that's very mild. So you really wouldn't be able to taste that aroma that much. It's deep fried, and then it's served on the side with a sauce. And the final dish that we're going to try here is called three cup chicken, and that's a very typical Taiwanese dish.
The chicken came to the table served in a cast iron pot. It was incredibly tender and full of flavor.
The three cup chicken is a braised chicken dish made from 1 cup of soy sauce, 1 cup of rice wine, and also 1 cup of sesame oil. And the Chinese, when they braise any kind of meat, instead of sealing it with by searing, which is the classic European technique, we actually boil it to seal the meat.
Now, to Western cooks, boiling would seem like something that would lose flavor, but this is an extremely flavorful dish.
Right, but the boiling part, the parboiling, it only takes about, you know, between 5 to 10 minutes, so it doesn't take away a lot of the flavor itself. It's when you actually put the spices and the herbs and the braising, that's when the flavor comes out.
It was barely noon when we finished the last bites at Ku Xiang Taiwanese restaurant and headed to our next stop, a bright and noisy place around the corner that specializes in food from Shanghai.
So what we're having here, this is our second stop, and we're here at Nanxiang Dumplings House. And this is pretty much a Shanghainese-style restaurant, and the food that they serve here are what we consider as snack-type food. They're not really, you know, a formal restaurant type food. So you'll get dumplings, you get noodles, you get, you know, a certain type of rice that's just, and also soybean milk. Soybean milk here in the Shanghainese style, you can actually have soybean milk as a savory dish. And usually they would put soy sauce and some vinegar, and the vinegar actually will coagulate the soybean milk itself. So what you're eating is like this fresh, curdled soybean milk. It's really delicious.
Keon wasn't kidding. The warm soybean milk was served in small bowls. It was the silkiest tofu you can imagine. Each bowl was topped with a piece of deep-fried savory doughnut that added a nice crunch to the dish. It was only our second stop, and I was already getting full. But I was also curious about how all these Chinese culinary traditions come together in New York.
If you go to a market here in Flushing, you can find ingredients from all over the country in China rather than just like one region.
Does that have an influence on the food that is the dishes that people are cooking in New York? Is there a new Chinese cuisine emerging in the city that combines ingredients from all these different regions of China that wouldn't normally be available in China?
I would say that from the new immigrants, I don't see that. But, you know, many of the newer, more progressive Chinese chefs do start using all kinds of different ingredients. And I use a lot of different ingredients from different regions of China.
Keon told me about a dish he makes, sea cucumber in aspic with a Sichuan sauce, which combines ingredients and cooking techniques from three different regions of China.
And so that's a dish that you would never find in China, but you have to come to New York to taste it.
No, right. Correct.
Okay, enough talking. It was time to move on to our third stop of the day. At Fu Run Restaurant, we were shown to a private dining room. They specialize in dishes from Shandong Province in northeastern China. One of the things we ate there was stir-fried sea intestine.
Actually, sea intestine is not eaten for a long time in China. It's only been popular since the 1960s, which is during the Cultural Revolution. In fact, before Cultural Revolution, the Chinese only used sea worm as a bait for fishing. But it was during that tumultuous period of the Cultural Revolution that there was famine and so on. That's when they started eating this as a food. And it has become very popular, and it's now a delicacy of Shandong Province.
In fact, it's so popular, Keon said, that sea worms are now farm-raised, making them a sustainable variety of seafood. I can't say they were my favorite. They were a little too rubbery and fishy. But there were lots of other dishes to choose from, including barbecued lamb ribs that were encrusted with a thick layer of crushed cumin seeds. Delicious. The final stop on our tour was the New World Mall on Main Street in Flushing. Take the escalator down one floor to the food court, and you'll find dozens of food stalls offering dishes from virtually every region of China.
And the food that they serve here are what we consider as street food. These are all snack-type street food and noodles, dumplings, and such. And the different regions that's represented here is quite amazing. They're from western part of China, they're from northern part of China, some of them are from Sichuan, which is southwestern part of China, and then there are also Cantonese-style dim sum that's available here. So it's an incredible place to come that you can sample all the different cuisines of Chinese cooking. In fact, it's snack-type food of Chinese food.
And if you wonder what we had for dessert, one of the stalls at the New World Mall is called Snow Po. They sell Taiwan-style shaved ice, and we chose the mango flavor. It was a technicolor dessert that was frosty, gelatinous, creamy, sweet, and tangy, all on one oversized plate. I was so full I thought I would never finish it, but I did, and I'm ready to do it all over again. I'm John Rudolph, and you're listening to Food in Two Worlds. All the addresses of the places we visited on this Chinese food tour in Flushing are on our website, news.feetintoworlds.org. Now we're going to Manhattan's Chinatown. Opening a restaurant has been a rite of passage for Chinese immigrants, but many of these immigrant entrepreneurs don't want their American-born children to follow them into the same line of work. Instead, they focus on academic success and pushed their children to go into professions like law, medicine, or banking. But as Larry Tung reports, some second-generation Chinese Americans are defying their parents' wishes and bringing new ideas and energy to the Chinatown restaurant business.
Located on the quiet and crooked Doyer Street, Nam Hua was one of Chinatown's first dim sum restaurants. It opened in 1920, and it's filled with old-world charm like vintage posters on the wall and old tea tin cans on the shelves. The old store sign from the 1950s still hangs above the doorway. In recent years, the restaurant lost business to its newer and much larger rivals. Huge banquet halls where diners choose dumplings and spring rolls from carts that are pushed through the aisles by middle-aged Chinese women. Last year, 33-year-old Wilson Tang took over Nam Hua from his uncle and started a marketing campaign to make sure Nam Hua wouldn't be forgotten.
I feel like I did my part in preserving a piece of New York, and we saw a huge surge of older folks that came back, and they remembered coming here since the 50s or 60s or 70s or 80s or the 90s. And they brought their kids, and now their kids brought their kids, and now their kids brought their kids. So at one time, I could see like four generations of a family in here.
Tang is among a handful of second-generation Chinese Americans who are going into the Chinatown restaurant business. The food he serves at Nam Hua is traditional, dishes like steamed shrimp dumplings and pork buns. But while earlier generations of Chinese restaurant owners were content to advertise by giving away paper menus and matchbooks with their restaurant's logo, Tang is marketing Nam Hua in an entirely new way.
We have the largest push as far as social media is concerned in Chinatown. So we have a whole new segment of people that actually come down to Chinatown because they saw us on Facebook, or they saw us on Twitter, or they saw us on our website, or they read about us in some magazine or some newspaper. We have a line of videos coming up. We're thinking about doing an online store for different products. We're thinking about a second outpost, maybe in another neighborhood, or even like a food truck or some ideas like that. So a lot in the pipeline.
Tang's venture into the restaurant business was not what his parents had in mind when he was growing up. Like many second-generation Chinese Americans, he followed his parents' advice and studied business and economics at Pace University.
Both my parents bringing me up, they wanted me to do well, go to school, go to college, and not have to work in Chinatown or in a restaurant business or anything that requires a lot of manual labor. I listened, and I went to school. My first job was in corporate America, but something inside me really wanted to do something different.
It's lunchtime at Red Egg, another Chinatown dim sum restaurant a few blocks away. In contrast to Nam Hua's old-time charm, Red Egg has a sleek, lounge-like feel and a full bar that offers specialty drinks like the lychee sacchettini and the blueberry caipirinha. Red Egg's owner, 37-year-old Darren Wan, is another second-generation Chinese-American from a restaurant family. Like Wilson Tang, Wan hopes to challenge old-school Chinatown restaurants that provide cheap and fast food but not-so-friendly service. He says he wanted a dim sum restaurant that doesn't have the typical bright fluorescent lights with large tables where customers sometimes have to sit with strangers.
We do have round tables that fit, up to 10 to 15 people, but we try to stay away from having the entire space be filled with those type of tables, so there's no table sharings or things like that. It's kind of a lot more comfortable feel with the target market of being, whether it be a tourist who are coming in to visit Chinatown for the first time, or maybe even some of the local businessmen who just kind of want a more quiet setting for perhaps a business lunch.
With an MBA from the University of Chicago, Wan worked in investment banking before opening the restaurant in 2008. In a break with tradition, Wan decided that at Red Egg, dim sum will be served all day. You can even order it for dinner. The prices are a little bit higher than at other dim sum restaurants, but Wan is determined to make his restaurant stand out from the pack.
Everything's made fresh to order, so you probably won't see any ladies walking around and pushing carts.
Having both spent a lot of time in Chinatown as children, Darren Wan and Wilson Tang say they were happy to return to the neighborhood, bridging generations and marketing their restaurants to a diverse New York crowd, all while keeping the dim sum fresh. For Feeding Two Worlds, I'm Larry Tong.
Finally, this week marks the start of the Chinese Year of the Dragon. The Chinese celebrate the Lunar New Year with deafening firecrackers, lucky money in red envelopes, and feasting on special foods. For journalist Richard Ye, a native of Taipei living in New York, this is the time of year when he feels most at home.
I've never been to Times Square on New Year's Eve to see the ball drop. I save my celebrating for the Lunar New Year, when the city's many Chinatowns come alive, with lion dances, firecrackers, and street vendors peddling auspicious fruits like kumquats and pomegranates. The best part for my family is the New Year's Eve dinner, a tradition where we gather around my grandma's dinner table, feasting on a meal full of symbolism and good fortune. There's the stir-fried rice cake that represents growth with each passing year, and egg dumplings that look like gold nuggets. Another family favorite is the Shanghainese taofu, a labor-intensive dish of braised wheat gluten that is both savory and sweet. And we always prepare a whole fish, only to leave it uneaten because it symbolizes a year of surplus. All this food, lovingly prepared by my grandma, or Dada as we call her, is homey, nutritious, and nostalgic. Those in the family who can't make it to the dinner join us by video chat and stay for the whole meal. This is what home feels like. In the 20 years since I moved to New York with my family, I've only visited my homeland of Taiwan 3 times. I guess I don't miss it as much as some of my friends and family who go back every year. New York is where I call home now. Still, after being away for 7 years and feeling the itch, I went back for a visit last spring. As I traveled up and down the island, eating my way around night markets and open kitchens in tiny alleyways, typical of Taiwan's street food culture, I saw how my countrymen live a simple life around dinner tables. I was once again reminded that food is where home is. And for the first time, a bit to my own surprise, the food of my homeland made me miss my adopted home in New York and my family's traditions around Dada's dinner table.
Richard Ye is a producer at our media partner, WNYC, New York Public Radio. The producers of this podcast are Sarah Kate Kramer and Jocelyn Gonzalez. The engineer is Chad Bernhard at the studios of the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. Thanks for listening. I'm John Rudolph.
Feet in Two Worlds is supported by the New York Community Trust and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation,
with additional support from the Mertz Gilmore Foundation and the Cyrus Fund and WNYC, New York Public Radio.
This program was produced in association with the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism and CUNY TV.
Feet in Two Worlds brings the work of immigrant journalists to public radio and the web. We are a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School.
You can support this podcast by going to news.feetintoworlds.org and clicking Help Support FI2W.